You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the herb. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, June 12th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. So glad to be back with you today. Thanks for joining us, and make sure you check out our new site at mjagenda.com, where you can become a patron of this show and help keep this on the air. We got a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to start things off with our cannabis Q&A segment. Dr. Mitch Earlywine will be joining us. We got a lot of studies to talk about today, including our lead study on the effect of medical marijuana laws and how that had any effect, if it had any effect, on adult use and teen use of marijuana. We've also got some drug war data mining to get to. We take a look at some records that have been unearthed in Louisiana that show our capitalist addiction to cheap prison labor. We'll tell you all about that at the middle of the show. Then in our second segment, in the bottom half hour, we've got an activist agenda for you. I was out at Portland's first annual Hemp Fest Expo, out at the Expo Center, and I caught this talk from Anthony Taylor. He's the head of Compassionate Oregon, and he wanted to speak a little bit about defending state medical marijuana programs as adult use legalization takes root in the West. And at the end of the show, we'll have time for a radical rant. Well, I'll tell you about the rumors of my demise and how they were greatly exaggerated. Where have I been the past couple of weeks? I'll tell you all about it at the end of the first hour. Then stay tuned for hour two.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
And now, another episode of Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre. I'm your host, Leonard Pinth-Garnell III. Tonight we revel in the hilarity of acquiring cannabis when miscommunication occurs between the cannabis delivery service and the consumer. The Royal Shakespearean Cannabis Theatre Company presents the classic David's Not Present piece, made famous by Richard Merrin and Thomas Chong. Enjoy.
Hark. Who goes there?
It is I, David. Pray grant me immediate passage, good sir. I come bearing a package of great import.
Hark! Who goes there?
It is I, David, as I previously informed you. Make haste in unlatching this portal, for I believe the constable hath cast his visage upon me. I bring you the package you seek.
'Tis David?
Affirmative, my good man. 'Tis David. Now open this door forthwith.
David's not present.
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre, I'm Leonard Pinth-Garnell III.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Freedom Leaf Preview with Steve Bloom from Freedom Leaf Magazine. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is your Cannabis Headline News. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your Cannabis Headline News for Monday, June 12, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. In an exclusive, Massroots' Tom Angel reports that U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is asking congressional leaders not to renew a current federal law that prevents the Department of Justice from spending money to interfere with state medical marijuana laws, saying, quote, I believe it would be unwise for Congress to restrict the discretion of the department to fund particular prosecutions, particularly in the midst of a historic drug epidemic and potentially long-term uptick in violent crime, end quote, Sessions wrote in a letter to Republican and Democratic House leadership and Senate leadership. Continuing, quote, the department must be in a position to use all laws available to combat the transnational drug organizations and dangerous drug traffickers who threaten American lives, end quote. The letter, sent to Capitol Hill last month, was shared with Massroots by a congressional staffer. The protections are a result of a rider known as the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment after its lead congressional sponsors, which has been enacted into law with strong bipartisan votes for the past three fiscal years, including the current one. More patients will soon be able to buy medical marijuana in Florida after state lawmakers passed legislation Friday, putting into effect a constitutional amendment passed by 71% of voters. The legislation sets into motion a plan to license 10 new growers by October, bringing the statewide total to 17. It allows patients to use cannabis pills, oils, edibles, and vape pens with a doctor's approval, but bans smoking. John Morgan, the Orlando trial lawyer who bankrolled the campaign for medical marijuana, has promised to sue over the smoking prohibition. In addition, the new law allows patients to use cannabis for chronic pain, but only if that pain is connected to another qualifying medical condition. Cities and counties can ban dispensaries, but they are not allowed to block delivery of cannabis or limit where dispensaries can open more strictly than they do pharmacies. Lawmakers approved the bill by a 29-6 vote in the Senate and a 103-9 vote in the House. Governor Rick Scott said Friday he plans to sign the bill into law. Federal officials have seized 1,000 bags from Boulder-based Stash Logics after identifying the product, a lockable, odor-blocking container used to store marijuana or other medications, as drug paraphernalia. Company officials said the decision will cost them tens of thousands of dollars and force them to bring manufacturing into the U.S. to avoid customs. Customs and Border Protection, a division of the Department of Homeland Security, in April sent a letter to Stash Logics, which said the bags could not be imported. 2 weeks ago, the company received another letter stating that its most recent order had been confiscated at the Long Beach port. Stash Logics is pursuing an appeal. Stash Logics founder Skip Stone said the bags themselves cost $15,500. The company had to forfeit an additional $18,000 worth of raw materials overseas, which also means they need to find a U.S. manufacturer and fast. Vermont Digger reports that Governor Phil Scott signed into law a bill that expands Vermont's medical marijuana system. The legislation, S-16, expands the list of conditions that qualify for the medical marijuana registry to include Parkinson's disease, Crohn's disease, and post-traumatic stress, as of July 1st. Under the new law, PTSD patients will also need to receive regular psychiatric or therapeutic care in order to qualify. The new law also will allow more medical marijuana dispensaries to operate in Vermont. It creates one additional dispensary license, which will bring the total number of dispensaries in the state to 5. Under the law, another license will be created when the number of registered patients in Vermont reaches 7,000. Currently, about 4,000 people are on the registry, according to legislators. Also, each dispensary now will be able to have 2 locations. Previously, they were restricted to only 1. The Secretary General of the Uruguayan National Drug Board, Diego Oliveira, argued that there is a sustained but not explosive registration as expected regarding cannabis registration at the Cannabis Regulation and Control Institute. He added that there are adding pharmacies interested in the sale of the product, which will begin in the first 15 days of July. Oliveira also stated that other pharmacies are interested in the commercialization of the product. According to surveys, there are over 160,000 cannabis users in Uruguay. This is your Cannabis Headline News. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
At Herbie Lady's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll receive over 20 hours of original first-hour podcasts, plus other materials only available to paid subscribers. Or for just $9.99 a month, become a VIP patron. You'll get over 40 hours of podcasts for the complete program, including Toker Talk Radio, plus ad-free downloads of the segments heard on the Marijuana Agenda. Plus, VIPs get exclusive access to the video replay of the two-hour live stream show and downloads of the spreadsheets and charts I provide from my years of curating marijuana data sets. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at mjagenda.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for our Government at Work, the latest in cannabis reform at the local, state, federal, and international level. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and author of numerous books and columns on cannabis science, culture, history, and medicine. Email your questions to Dr. Earlywine at 420research@gmail.com or call the Marijuana Agenda message line at 650-LEGAL-MJ. Now, here's your Cannabis Q&A.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Mitch, welcome back.
Pleasure to be back.
I want to remind everyone listening that you can get your questions answered by sending an email to 420research@gmail.com, and we may bring it up again on one of our bi-monthly segments here on the Marijuana Agenda. Also, you can always call our 24-hour message line at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565. And wow, Dr. Mitch, there is a whole passel of studies that came out all on top of each other, it seems, and we got a lot to get to. So let's start with this first one, a study showing that the medical marijuana programs that have been established throughout the United States haven't led to more increased marijuana use by youth. We've heard that before, but what else is this study telling us?
Well, what's curious is we're seeing higher rates of adult use if the medical marijuana program isn't necessarily tightly regulated, but not more cannabis use disorder. And so I want to emphasize that what this really means is, sure, more folks can get their hands on cannabis, but that doesn't mean cannabis is somehow creating more problems. And I do want to point out that cannabis use disorder now has a range of severity, so literally just two minor symptoms and you can actually qualify for the disorder itself. So the idea that we need these tightly regulated medical programs that only allow, you know, people who are near death or dying to have access, that's really not the answer to our problem here, and that we could have plenty of folks have their symptoms alleviated and even have adults be free to use recreationally without creating problems.
Does this report then suggest that the loosely regulated medical cannabis programs are somewhat standing in a bit for the lack of adult use regulations?
I got to admit, it's easy to sort of read it that way. So some folks who may come in with something that's a genuine symptom, but not something that you think of as a severe illness, say insomnia, they're going to have access now in a way that is comparable to folks who might not bother getting a medical card in a state where both medical and recreational is available, or in states where it's really all just recreational and folks who go in for medical reasons or otherwise can also have access.
In this next study, the title threw me off when I saw it. It says, is access to medical marijuana a disamenity? I had to go get my dictionary to figure out what that was. But according to what I read in it, it said something about medical marijuana laws causing families to flee or raise fewer children in the states that pass these laws. Have you ever heard of anything like this?
So it's curious because that whole idea of a disamenity, something that would discourage people with children from living in a state, is not one we hear about in the news too often. And when you take a look at the abstract here, you'd think, oh, wow, people who have kids must not want to live in a medical marijuana state, which seems a little counter to some of our readings of, say, the children with epilepsy who really can benefit from cannabis-based meds. But this is one of the most abstruse articles we've had in a while, and I had to go all the way down to one of the tables in the abstract here, and what you see is 3 years later, there's a drop of 12 families per 1,000 with kids. So we're talking about a really small effect here, and not one that I'm absolutely sure can be attributed just to medical cannabis. I think there may be things that are in common in some of these states that had data analyzed that had medical marijuana availability that might have had folks who either aren't necessarily interested in having kids be more likely to stay there, or just plain old job opportunities for families may have been different in other states and folks may have left for those very same reasons.
You know, I'm glad you bring that up because one of the first things I thought of when I read this was this is with respect to legal, adult use marijuana. But in Denver, Seattle, and Portland, these three cities where legalization has taken root, the rents have just skyrocketed. And there's been a real shortage of available housing. And I would think if you're a family looking to live somewhere and the rents are going up because of legal weed, perhaps that has something to do with it.
I really find that explanation a lot more parsimonious than some oddball phobia of medical marijuana. Nicely put.
Wow. I'm working toward my honorary doctorate. Let's get to this next study. Examining the influence of adolescent marijuana use on adult intelligence. This is the go-to talking point. The Project Sam people want to say, you know, if you smoke pot when you're an adolescent, you lose 6 points of IQ. This claims to have further evidence in the causation versus spuriousness debate. What new do we get from this one?
Well, so we've got this national longitudinal study of adolescent to adult health. So get folks at 12 to 21 and then follow them up years later when they're 18 to 26, the hope being we'll find some predictors of change in a number of measures, including some of the IQ measures. And unfortunately, this is a lot of smoke but no fire. The significant effect that they're making a big deal about is really a 1 to 2 point change in intelligence scores. So that's, you know, basically the kind of thing that you might have a problem, or maybe you just needed to pee when you were doing that test or something like that. I mean, literally a broken light bulb could create a larger change in IQ score here. And so it is statistically significant simply because these sample sizes are just huge. And that's only for the binary measure, have you ever used or not. We're not seeing an effect where as use increases, IQ goes down in a stepwise fashion. And that's what you'd really expect if cannabis were altering IQ. So I got to say, you know, yes, cannabis isn't for kids and you're not going to go to school high and learn anything. But this notion that it's going to create some kind of wild brain damage and lower your IQ to some kind of mental retardation is absolute nonsense.
Another study comes up in our list having to do with anxiety, and it's entitled The Effects of Acute and Repeated Cannabinoid Injections on Immediate and Delayed Object Memory and Unconditioned Anxiety. We know a lot of people that use cannabis to treat their own anxiety. Is this study going to bolster that case or harm it?
This is another one of those wild three-way interactions where high doses the first time might work, but only for female rats. And then they seem to habituate on the second dose, but not in the males. And so I gotta say, this is one of those predicaments where this is adding to a big body of literature, but this study on its own isn't particularly definitive. What I would emphasize is that we are seeing during intoxication some problems with encoding of memory, specifically in the younger rats, and the female rats may be at higher risk for this, and that at least in a high dose, THC by itself, what a surprise if you're a rodent, makes you kind of high strung at least the first time you've done it. I feel like the real meta message here is if you've got clinical anxiety, medical cannabis probably isn't your first line of defense. Feel free to email me for a referral to a nice mental health professional in your area. And then once you treat that anxiety, you'll be able to enjoy your cannabis a whole lot more.
You know, we've discussed in the past the use of cannabis as an analgesic and some studies that showed some moderate use helped, but then if you went too far, you went over the line and it made things worse. Could that effect be at play here with respect to anxiety?
It looks like it's a little more linear rather than that inverted U we saw with pain, where there's a nice sort of Goldilocks sweet spot there. With cannabis, the higher the dose, the higher the anxiety seems to work, at least in these studies where THC is administered on its own. I do feel like the strains that are popular out there often have enough CBD to take that sort of magical ideation, psychotic, teeth-grinding edge off some of those sativas. So it's not going to be the same for every single strain, but the evidence we have for just THC on its own, it looks like the more you get, the more psychotomimetic, as they say, or anxiety-producing it can become.
You know, I was at the Portland Hemp Fest Expo this weekend and heard a speaker discussing how he wouldn't even select a cannabis product that didn't have at least 1% CBD in the profile. And it's nice that we have legalization happening and we can get these numbers and kind of shape our decisions based on something other than the THC percentage. Is that something that you've heard of or would recommend?
Oh, I would definitely recommend that. We do find in sort of the underground work that the high CBD strains are much less likely to be anxiogenic, you know, generating anxiety. And, I really envy anybody in those states where they have those data. Here in New York, it's such a small medical program and not quite the same level of sophistication in the reports. So folks are going in without that knowledge about CBD, and then we're discovering more and more about CBD on its own being wonderful just as a neuroprotectant and just an amazing medication. So I'm hoping that real high CBD strains will become part of every dispensary's armament.
And, you know, speaking of anxiety, there was a piece in the Chicago Tribune saying smoke weed to relax, you may want to reconsider. This was a study out of UIC. Is this the same study or was this a different look at the information?
No, this is a delightful lab that actually my student Nicholas Van Damme worked with this same crew years ago. And the bottom line on this is just we've got an anxiety producing procedure in the lab that requires going up and making a speech in front of cameras and trained graduate raters who are sort of looking at you in this foreboding fashion while you're doing this public speaking, which is something that everybody finds really aversive. And it's not stunning to learn that a high dose of THC prior to this kind of public speaking event is not particularly pleasant, particularly in an experienced user. So you and I might really get a kick out of this, Russ. But your average UIC undergrad who gets approved for a study like this, of course, is going to say that the THC is making things more stressful when they have to give a public announcement. But the headline then is a little misleading. So this saying, smoke weed to relax, what I would have liked to have seen is, after this horrible speech, could people have access to THC and then relax? And I think that would have had a lot more external validity.
All right. One final study for us to take a look at, the examination of cumulative effects of early adolescent depression on cannabis and alcohol use disorder in late adolescence in a community-based cohort. Basically, we're trying to find out, if you were depressed as a young teen, does that lead to cannabis or alcohol disorders as an older teen? Is that the gist?
In fact, that's really the direction that seemed to pan out, and the reverse was not true, which kind of does buttress our argument that essentially the disorder is not stemming from cannabis use, and cannabis use doesn't seem to be generating depression. It's that folks who are depressed do the best they can, and a subset of them turn to cannabis in hopes of getting some relief and may actually get some, but particularly early in life when you don't have a lot of the skills required to just handle things, you are more likely to get diagnosed with a cannabis use disorder. But as I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, cannabis use disorder now is literally just two symptoms and not something to confuse with, say, heroin dependence or some of the opiate dependencies that we're seeing so much in the news.
Always informative to have here on the show. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is a professor at SUNY Albany and also the host of Burning Issues, a podcast on CannabisRadio.com, where he goes into more depth on some of these burning issues. And can you give us a preview of your next episode?
We should have Normal's new executive director on there real soon, and he's going to give us the lowdown on what's going on federally and some of the state legislation as well.
Fantastic. Dr. Mitch Earlywine, thanks for joining us here on the Marijuana Agenda, and have yourself a great day.
You too, man.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose, deaths, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Marijuana Policy Insider with Marijuana Policy Project. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in Drug War Data Mining, we take a look at some records that were unearthed by muckrock.com, a post entitled Louisiana Records Give Insight into Thousands of Businesses That Utilize Prison Labor. And if you'd like to learn more about this, we'll have the links available up on mjagenda.com after tonight's show. And it's something we've talked about before on this show. The use of cheap prison labor is being is a crisis here within our country, given that we have so many corporations, so many of these institutions that are using cheap prison labor that ends up diluting the labor market for people out here outside of prison walls who could use some of these good jobs. And this goes to the state of Louisiana. The Louisiana Department of Corrections provided Muckrock with some of their records. And what they found is that there is a list of over 5,000 business locations in the state of Louisiana that are currently working with what they call the Transitional Work Program. The report itself, whereas one line, they got one line for each business and its address, 82 pages in this report of these over 5,000 businesses that are using cheap prison labor. The number of jobs that are being utilized that are cheap prison labor jobs that could be going to people who need jobs on the outside, over 3,300 jobs, including 1,600 labor jobs that are being used, 271 kitchen worker jobs, 161 factory worker jobs, 201 construction laborer jobs, 131 butcher or meat handler jobs, 98 dishwashers, 85 prep cooks. The list goes on and on. These are jobs that people on the outside could be doing. And a few facts about the prison labor industry in this country. There's a few companies that are involved in this. One is called Unicor. They handle the federal prison industry labor. And some interesting facts about this. The federal prisoners, people that are in federal prison for drug charges or what have you, are required to work for this prison labor. Required. There's no choice. They have to go do these jobs. And before you yell about slave labor or slavery, understand that even though the 13th Amendment abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, it maintains an exception for people that are convicted of a crime. Now, back in the day, this was inmate chain gangs, you know, road workers and such, people that were doing jobs that the government needed done, making license plates, for example. We remember that old stereotype. Well, it's one thing to be using taxpayer money to imprison people that have committed crimes and then use their labor to do work for the people. It's another thing to have private prisons farming out involuntary servitude to private corporations from which they may profit by hiring cheaper labor and undercutting the labor market of able-bodied citizens in the United States. 1865, we abolished this, but in 1871, the Virginia Supreme Court declared prisoners were, quote, slaves of the state, end quote, 1871. The UN, in its Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948, passed a right that, quote, everyone has the right to form and join trade unions for the protection of his interests. Everyone, even prisoners, have the right to join trade unions. This is a Universal Declaration of Human Rights. But in 1977, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld a North Carolina warden's ban on prison labor unions. So our Supreme Court has banned prison labor unions, even though the UN has declared these are a universal human right. There, in 1998, just about 20 years ago, there were 2,500 prison and jail industries. I'm sure that number has grown quite a bit since then. And the minimum estimate for how much this prison labor is worth, the annual value of the output of prison and jail industries, $2 billion. $2 billion being generated by prison involuntary servitude. In the federal Unicor, the federal prison industries, they have 22,560 prisoners that are currently working. And the wages for the people working at Unicor, the minimum wage for a prisoner in the federal prison system, 23 cents an hour. 23 cents an hour minimum wage. The maximum you can make as a federal prisoner working for Unicor, $1.15. And the people working in the Unicor prison industries got it good. Outside of the Unicor system, other federal prisoner industries are working anywhere from 12 cents to 40 cents an hour. 12 cents to 40 cents an hour. The minimum wage in Haiti is 30 cents, and we've got prisoners working at 12 cents per hour. And keep in mind, even when these prisoners do manage to make some money, working in these prison labor, a lot of time that money goes to restitution, which is fine. That would make sense. Make some money and give it back to the victims of the crimes. But again, recall that this prison labor also is subject to all sorts of deductions that nickel and dime these guys out of all their nickels and dimes. For example, a phone call. You just want to call your lawyer from prison can run up to $5 a minute. $5 a minute when these guys are making 12 cents to a buck 15 an hour. It's just cruel and unusual punishment. The average for someone who is making office furniture, for example, Unicor, the federal prisoners, are making office furniture. There are 18 prisons, federal prisons, where office furniture is being made by Unicor prisoners from 23 cents to a buck 15 an hour. A non-prisoner who'd be doing that job out in the U.S. workforce would make $13.04 an hour. So these corporations are getting a massive subsidy by employing prison labor. And it's time for us to take a deeper look at this and to really reconcile if this is exactly what the 13th Amendment meant. It's one thing, as I said, ethically speaking, to have prisoners in a publicly funded prison doing labor that benefits the public, the chain gangs, the making the license plates, the doing the activities that are necessary for our government to produce. But when they're sewing together panties for Victoria's Secret or booking trips on Greyhound or Delta Airlines, jobs that could be done by Americans making decent wages, that's just that we just cannot let that stand. It's time for us to investigate this and put an end to this subsidization of profit based on involuntary prison labor.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of The Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. If you're an organization or business looking to promote your brand, we have sponsorship patronage available at MJAgenda.com. Sponsorship includes 15 and 30 second ad breaks and 6 minute interviews on the podcast, depending on sponsorship level, which begins at $19.99 a month. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at MJAgenda.com.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Northwest Cannabis Chronicle from the Marijuana Business Association. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Activism begins with ACT. The Marijuana Agenda features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
Good
Good day and welcome to Activist Agenda. I'm Russ Belville. Saturday, June 10th, in Portland, Oregon, the first annual Portland Hemp Fest Expo was held at the Portland Exposition Center on Marine Drive. This all-day event featured vendors and speakers from all across the Pacific Northwest, including Anthony Taylor, the head of Compassionate Oregon, the leading organization fighting for the rights of medical marijuana patients in the Beaver State. Anthony spoke to open the event on the use of cannabis as a medicine for all sorts of health conditions and the fight to protect medical marijuana from the advent of adult use legalization, regulations for which are threatening many medical marijuana patients' rights. This is Anthony Taylor.
What about cannabis for health conditions for the everyman, and what about cannabis for patients here in Oregon? I advocate for cannabis as medicine, and I use it myself daily. I use topicals for minor aches and pains. I use edibles for titration, meaning I ingest 15 milligrams of cannabis three times a day, and again at bedtime, and I use flower for breakthrough conditions. I believe cannabis should be available for anybody that needs it, and in today's market, it just about is. This is part of the dynamic that happened when marijuana was legalized, dispensaries were legalized. Marijuana, even though it's a scheduled controlled substance, has become an over-the-counter product. And anybody can walk into the store and buy what they need. And it makes it tricky to keep this dialogue going that, you know, marijuana is medicine and we need to make sure that this dialogue keeps going. So, you know, a medical patient can, in fact, walk into these stores. They can buy products that are of a higher potency and in greater quantities. But while this is convenient, it does pose many problems for patients, not the least of which is cost. Today's prices are out of reach for most patients. Many of them have also lost their growers and are no longer getting the medicine from a grower at free or greatly reduced prices. A quick look at Leafly, and one can see while most stores do offer $6 and $8 grams, most range in the price from $12 to $18 for flower and $60 to $75 for a gram of concentrate. Patients that need these products every day cannot afford these prices, and although OLCC stores are allowed to give marijuana away for free, I have yet to go into a store that has that program set up. They might be a little hesitant to do it because when they give marijuana to patients for free, it means they're not buying it from them in their stores. This is unfortunate. It's uncompassionate. And I think the owners of these OLCC licensed stores need to take it upon themselves to figure out a way to make sure this is happening. So, for instance, they could shoulder the cost of testing if the grower throws a pound or two into this low-income system. But we've been talking for 2 years in the legislature about creating such a program, and to date, no legislation has been introduced to create a low-income patient program. We, as Compassionate Oregon, will be working on that hard next session along with some other issues that are facing cannabis. So, $14 a gram equals $6,300 a pound, and $18 a gram equals $8,100 a pound. Most of the stores mark up products 100%. I don't know any growers that are getting $3,200 or $4,000 for a pound, and I don't know any of the stores that are offering to pick up any of the testing costs or the packaging and labeling costs. So we've got to make some changes in this direction with the OLCC licensed retailers. What these stores do provide, however, is anonymity. It provides a safe refuge for, you know, the college president or the doctor or the veterinarian or the lawyer or the school teacher that was hesitant to become part of a state-sponsored program and put their name on a list. So this allows them to go in and buy the product they need. Now, the difference here is that a lot of the patients that are part of the program have needs that need to be met daily. Some of the other folks are using the cannabis occasionally, or when the conditions surpass their ability to cope with them, and they'll take a little bit of their product, like we do with Tylenol or Aleve or NyQuil. So these are their needs, and we have to make it cheaper for them to purchase their products. So these, again, are people that can walk into these stores and afford to purchase these products. But they're just buying a little tin of cannabis healing balm, and it's going to last them for a couple of months, so they can afford, you know, $45 for that small tin of salve. But somebody that's using that, goes through a tin like that for neuropathy pain or carpal tunnel issues or arthritis, they're going to go through something like that in a week. And for people that have to use a gram of oil every day to buy it in the stores, it's going to, at $60 a pop, what's that, $420 a week, $1,600 and some dollars per month? People can't afford that, and that's part of Compassionate Oregon's goal also, is to make sure that they can be subsidized. So, for instance, going back to the low-income patient program, if a patient has stamped on his card that that card was received at a reduced application fee, like $20 for the veterans or $50 for SSI people, then they get a greatly discounted or free product. These are the kinds of things that the industry needs to do to help patients, because the legislature certainly has not helped patients. And the OLCC growers as well can now take advantage of the opportunity to grow a bump-up canopy, of which 75% of the yield has to go to patients. And the other 25% can go into their inventory and go out into the retail market. But these sorts of things, the OLCC licensees need to start taking advantage of. And if they're having troubles getting rid of 75% of their extra canopy to patients, then they should be able to go to this low-income program and give it away there and satisfy the 75-25 split. I know this is a little complicated and a little boring, but these are the things that OLCC and the legislature and OHA have put in place to help take up some of the slack, because from January of 2015 to October of 2016, the number of patients that did not designate a grower doubled. It went from about 8,000 to over 16,000, and now we're closing in on 18,000. And the recent legislation that was just passed and signed into law restricts people's ability to grow their medicine by cutting it in half. Now, the law right now says you can have no more than 6 medical plants at your home. You can have your 4 recreational plants, but if there's a married couple, and why we call this particular issue the marriage penalty, if there's a married couple, they can't grow 12 plants. They can't grow 6 plants each. They can grow 6 medical and 4 recreational, and that's all they're allowed to have. So some of the damage that was created by this bill, we're trying to fix with House Bill 2198. And another thing that has happened recently is the OHA has said to the medical marijuana growers, you can no longer use GPS coordinates or tax lot ID numbers as an address for your medical marijuana grow site. This will have a devastating effect on patients. There's about 4,000 patients that this would affect immediately, and they would be unable to renew their grower. And the grower, unless this changes, will, in the end, be unable to register his own grow site at his own property. So that's another thing that House Bill 2198 fixes. It also creates the Oregon Cannabis Commission, which will be the new administrative body for the medical marijuana program. They are required to report back to the legislature, something that's never been required for the medical marijuana program before. We've had 18 years with nobody coming to the legislature except patient advocates and people that are our patients themselves and saying, we need help here. Nobody has come as an agency, come to the legislature and say, we need help here. Nobody from OHA has come before the legislature and said, if you reduce the number of patients number of plants that a grower can grow for their patients, you're going to hurt this program. OHA has been MIA for so many years that the time has come to change management. So House Bill 2198 will put OMMP under new management. The people at OHA over the last couple of years under the direction of Andre Uso have made inroads for patients. The turnaround time for cards is down to 10 days or less. There's an online application system where you can just go online and enter all your information, pay your money, you get a receipt, and a few days later you get your card in the mail. On top of it, they put together and maintain a reporting system for the OMMP growers and the dispensaries and processors. They've done a lot of stuff over there, so we want to keep them working over there, but we want to give them some new bosses. And I don't think anybody will appreciate it more than the staff at OMMP. So for patients, legalization has actually been a double-edged sword. Sure, they can walk into a store now and buy product, but most can't afford it. Since legalization, most people have asked, now that it's legal, what do we need a medical marijuana program for? And I will assure you, from my experience anyway, that any state that has a medical marijuana program and legalizes marijuana for everyday consumption by everyday citizens, they will lose their medical marijuana program if the advocates for this program, the patients and their growers and their dispensaries, don't stand up and answer the question honestly and completely, yes, we need a medical marijuana program, and here is why. It doesn't matter that marijuana is legal. These people need medicine. This is a medicine that they have found that has been a medicine of last resort for many of them and many of their children and many of their aging parents. So it's important to make sure that cannabis is not regulated like alcohol, because when you put the alcohol regulators in place, it's not good for patients. And everything that industry does affects patients, everything. Because the problem is that the patients and the growers that provide for these patients pose a threat in the competition. And rather than everybody embracing all these different growers and all these different ways of bringing product to patients and to the market, they want to be protectionists and isolationists and say, no, 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 you can't come into our market. That puts the state of Oregon and therefore the patients in a very bad position, because the regulatory structure for the adult use people excludes the medical marijuana producers from any market. And so please, if you're in a state that's about to or wants to legalize marijuana and you have a medical program, please make sure that you stand up and fight hard for the medical marijuana program.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Police for Reform with Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Well, here I am, folks, back and better than ever. The rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. You'll know a couple of weeks ago that we came up at the end of May and all of a sudden this show disappeared. And you may have read some posts from me about how I just couldn't do it anymore. And lost within that was the subtlety that I just can't do this anymore for free. I've been struggling for a long time lately, just the past year or so, to make ends meet on the production of this show. And between having to have the internet access, the high-speed internet access that costs extra, the utilities for the studio, the materials, and the time that I spend working on the show, it just wasn't working out for me. And it's made me very frustrated because I love doing this. I love putting this show together. I appreciate and look forward to the interaction I get with fans. And it was just breaking my heart to have to come to the realization that I just couldn't do it for free anymore. As we relaunched the show as the Marijuana Agenda, I thought I had come up with the final solution. It was, you know, I'd gotten fed up and said, you know, this is it. I'm going to do this platform, and if it doesn't work, I'm out of this. And so I signed up with a platform called Libsyn because it's used by some of the biggest podcasters out there, Mark Maron, Joe Rogan, and so forth. And I thought that would be the answer to my prayers because it said it had options for paid subscriptions and some of the other features that I was looking for. The problem with it is that it added another $75 a month to my already overtaxed bank account here for putting this show together, for the storage space and for the high-level access that I needed. And as the end of May rolled around and that next $75 withdrawal was coming out, I just kind of snapped. I can't afford this anymore. I can't keep spending money to put this podcast together. I don't mind breaking even. I don't mind, you know, devoting and volunteering my time for it, but I can't lose money doing it. So that was what led to my hasty decision last week to just stop doing the show altogether. And it was amazing because once I did that, I had a few colleagues who reached out, and one, Tom Angel, and you know, I totally respect and admire the work that he's doing out there at Massroots and MarijuanaMoment.net, pointed out this platform called Patreon. And I had looked at it before, but I didn't realize exactly what it was all about. And as I took a look deeper into how it functioned, I realized, oh my God, this is exactly the platform I've been looking for. First of all, no upfront costs, no cost per month for me to put this together on Patreon. And there's no limit on how many files, how much data I can upload. So I can upload all my interviews and all my podcasts, both hours of the podcast for that matter, where Libsyn was going to charge me $75 a month. Patreon lets me do it absolutely free. But the way that their platform works is they take a cut. They take 5% off of what I generate from my subscriptions. But the subscription feature that they have does allow me to set up those tiered levels of subscription. So you can have a 420 subscription and just get the first hour podcast, or the $9.99 subscription and get both hours podcast plus a whole bunch of bonus downloads. It's what I've been promising for years. I've been talking about this VIP subscription for years, and I've never found the platform that would actually pull it off. Now we have it, this Patreon account. So that's the good news. We're here at mjagenda.com for the signups. You can sign up there. Just click the Become a Sponsor button. $4.20 a month gets you 20 hours a month. $9.99 a month gets you 40 hours a month plus more. But this stream that you're watching here on YouTube, this will always be free. If you want to watch live, that's going to be free. Also, we're going to provide the cannabis headline news absolutely free every day at MJAgenda.com. We'll talk a little bit more about this in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for your understanding. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you plant it, you